So then continuing in respect for the teacher and in dealings with the teacher, it's important to note here that this kind of teacher means one who is, means the basic principles are for any teacher, anyone who we are gaining from. You know, that our own parents, to some, you know, to the degree, to senior members of the family, to those who are giving us direction, and also to, you know, our teachers in the school, like academic teachers, you know, or the ashram teachers. But specifically, these are especially for those who one is living with, or one who is very seriously, they are taking very much charge of our education. And then very much this could be applied to the spiritual master. So depending upon the degree of formality or the depth of training or the depth of the relationship, then the principles will remain, but how much of the detail is applied, like much of the formality that is there with the mother will be very less. With the father, maybe a little bit more than that, but still it'll be quite close in the family. Then out of the house, then in the school will be more, boarding school more than that. You know, the very senior members of the community or spiritual leaders, you know, will be more than that, to the spiritual master more than that. So we have to see as the main principles are there. The whole idea of the Dharma Shastra, if you understand the rule, you understand its principle, then one has to learn or use one's intelligence or gain from others how that's applied in various situations. You know? Otherwise, then it will look that it's not very practical. But it's quite practical as long as one understands the principles behind it. So then, continuing here, let him not sit with his teacher to the leeward or to the windward of him, nor let him say anything which his teacher cannot hear. So if one is sitting, generally if there's a wind blowing, one wouldn't sit upwind of the teacher, you know, because brahmacharis, they do their work and that, they may not always be, you know, smelling wonderfully, since they don't use perfumes and all these kinds of things like that. And you should not sit, you know, downwind of him, that he will not be able to, when he speaks, he will not be able to be heard like that, because the wind also carries sound. Because sound goes through the ether, but it's always also carried in the air. So you'll find many times when the wind is blowing, downwind you can hear very nicely, but upwind you can't hear at all. So then, in other words, there should be, and also here, don't let him just speak so quietly that the teacher can't hear. Means if the teacher is present, you won't whisper. You won't be with one of your classmates talking very quietly and this and that. Whatever can be said should be said so the teacher can hear. It doesn't mean you shout it, but it just means that you speak normally. You don't try to hide anything from the teacher like that. Another thing of the point here, because somehow or another in yesterday's verse, in 198, when the teacher is nigh, let his better seat be low, but within sight of the teacher he shall not sit carelessly at ease. So here, somehow or another, because of the, just thinking of the Bengali, when I said the teacher is nigh, because nigh means, in Bengali, means not here. But actually, in the oldest this style of English, nigh is close, or around, is just coming, or is, you know, not just here, but it's around. So if the teacher's in the house, or like this. So he's pointing the point here, that his better seat should be low. One should not be on a high seat or high bed, because one should always be in a lower position than the teacher and all that. It says, but within sight, so that means he's around, he's not seeing, but he's somewhere in like this. But within the sight of the teacher, should not sit carelessly at ease. It means one can be relaxed, but one should not be sitting properly, you know, stretching the legs here and there and arms all over the place. And that one should sit a little properly, relaxed, but somewhat properly, like that. And then, if the teacher is not around at all, then he may be sitting in a very relaxed position with friends and stuff like that. But the one should, main thing is just be careful of the what it looks like, and that it's important, because that is also what you, how you project yourself is also much to do with what your consciousness is. So one is in a humble consciousness, one will be very careful about these things. He may sit with his teacher in a carriage drawn by oxen, horses, or camels, on a terrace, on a bed of grass or leaves, on a mat, on a rock, on a wooden bench, or in a boat. So this is means he sits. He can be sitting basically on an equal level, because most all these situations, that's all they afford. Means in a carriage drawn by oxen, then generally it's just flat. So there isn't a higher or lower. So you don't have to worry about that you sit in a lower position than the teacher. Drawn by horses also, there may be a place to sit, but then there's only enough place for the feet, so you can't sit on the floor. So you may sit on the same bench that is there. Or a camel. Camel is the same thing. It's even more small, and it just has a little place for the feet to hang. Like that. Then, you know, or in the cars, now modern cars, you have a seat. And it's not, you can't sit lower than that. You can't sit on the floor, or, you know, in the, what do you call it, in the glove compartment, or, you know, like that. You only have the seat to sit on. So generally, that's not a problem. On a terrace would be a terrace, veranda, anything like that, because all there is one level. It's flat. Then on a bed of grass or leaves, because that's just on the floor. There's also no other place to sit. Generally that, you just put it down. Grass is just put in the area. Like that, or leaves, you just put it down. It's one way of sleeping, especially if there's a lot of that available. You just take hay or grass or leaves and just sprinkle them, and very thick on the floor, you know, some inches or something like that. Exceedingly warm, much warmer than any kind of, you know, modern mattress or this or that. Very, very warm. And then, so something like that, it generally spreads around the floor. So then sitting on that is not a problem, because that's low. It's just not going to make any difference here. But on a regular bed, you wouldn't, because the regular beds can sit there nicely. There's a distinct where they are, where the floor is, then would do. Unless the bed takes up, there's a little room and the bed's the whole room, or it's a gutty, then it would be the same situation. On a mat. So you don't sit just on the bare floor, so the mat, there's no problem in sitting on the mat. So the mat's just one mat. So the teacher may sit at one end of the mat, the student at the other, and then class will go on that way, or just some discussion. On a rock, you know, so rocks also don't afford much variety. You know, you're walking and moving through, or traveling, or like that, and you sit on a rock. The rock's big enough for two to sit. It's not a problem to sit there. On a wooden bench, because it also only has one level and it's simple, and generally wooden benches aren't. In other words, these aren't teaching situations, sitting on a rock, sitting on a bench. So it doesn't really, that doesn't matter. Or in a boat, because if you sit lower in a boat, you end up in the bilge. So one avoids that. So it just sits that also is not a problem. So these are situations where even a senior personality or the spiritual master, you can be sitting on the same level in these situations. And then in other situations, one may avoid it. So we see here also another example of the very practicality of the Vedic culture. In situations where you can't do otherwise, one doesn't. It's very practical. But when in situations where one can, or it's expected, then it's done. Like that. Yeah. 205. If his teacher's teacher is near, let him behave towards his teacher's teacher, as towards his own teacher. But let him, unless he has received permission from his teacher, not salute venerable persons of his own family. So then, if the teacher's teacher is there, then one respects him and deals and all that like he would with the teacher. He respects the teacher, then he will deal with that teacher's teacher just in the same way. But with respectable persons of his own family, then unless the teacher gives permission, the spiritual master gives permission, he doesn't go and respect them. Like if he's with the spiritual master, the family comes with his permission only, then one goes and respects them. Because their position is in respect is lower. Like that. Like it mentioned, it says that in the list that was given here, you have the mother, and then so more respectable than that's the father. And it says, but more respectable than that is the teacher. Like that. Sometimes it also mentions on, I think maybe it's dealing with gratitude. Like that, in respect, it's less for the mother than the father. Just because it means it's easier to look at it. There was respect for the mother, then there's more respect for the father, and then more respect than that for the teacher. But I think when it's talking about gratitude, then the gratitude to the mother, or what we owe the mother, is 100 times more than what we owe the father. Because there's so many things the mother will do for the child, the father, you know, won't do. You know, I mean, the father is not, you know, hot on, you know, changing diapers and other things like that. So the mother is happily does that, so that in those times when you had no other facility, you know, it wasn't like, well, you can change your own diapers, but it's easier to let your mother do it. Then it's not, so the what one owes the mother is actually greater than the father. Like that. Father's protected, created the situation, but that personal, intimate dealings has been the most by the mother. But the respect is more for the father, because he's protecting and creating the situation in which the mother can do the work. But because it's very individual, it's very personal, that the mother has done that, that respect is so great. So it's a principle of the how you say, is even though someone's in a lesser position, but because personally they're dealing with you, then so much is it, that is taken as important. That's taken as something serious. You know? So like that. This aspect it's an important aspect. If one understands that, then many, many things become easy. Like in our dealings with Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada is the foundational guru in ISKCON. His teachings are the teachings of ISKCON. You are in line with his teachings, you're a bona fide member of ISKCON. You're not in line with the teachings, you're not. Very simple thing. So someone's bona fideness is their ability to speak and follow Prabhupada's order. So in this way, he is the most respectable. Right? At the same time, as we find that the senior devotees, they guide us in Prabhupada's instructions and take that personal care. So because they've done that, even though they're simply speaking Prabhupada's instructions, so one can say not much credit goes to them. Because when it comes to instruction, they're only saying what Prabhupada's going to say. But at the same time, is because they've taken that personal care to give us that, therefore that gratefulness must be there. That personal relationship with them is there. Like that. So they care for us, we care for them. But at the same time, is position of Prabhupada in respect is greater. Like that. So it's a very, very, it's an important principle that if these are understood, because so many times it appears they're contradictory, but they're not. Because they're not contradictory because of the personal nature. And because people means the, how you say, the natures, the nature of energy is contradictory. You know, that's what makes energy interesting, is its contradictory nature. So then, how you say? Yeah. So that's just in dealing with energy, which we are one of the energies, the marginal potency, then so many things are there that one has to deal with. And so there be many situations that seem to be contradictory, but they don't, because we're dealing with people, we're not dealing with robots. So you get these situations. You know, impractical. The teacher is respectable. So in a situation in which there is, you know, it's a formal situation, and if facility allows, then that will be shown by not sitting on an equal platform. But if there is no other facility, all there is the floor, one sits on the floor. One can't dig a hole in the floor and sit in that. That's artificial. Mm-hmm. Like that. So it matches very nicely. Or if it's an informal situation, you know, traveling and this and that, you may be sitting on the same level. Because there is no practically other level. So whether it's formal, informal, but whatever's the practical thing, that's what's done. But one is still very careful. One doesn't feel overly comfortable. Just like one doesn't, how are you saying? He should not sit carelessly at ease, but within sight of his teacher. So that also means here, if he's traveling with the teacher, that's also within sight of the teacher. So then he will not, you know, be carelessly at ease. It doesn't mean he's not at ease and comfortable. It just means carelessly. So one must be always aware of that formality. We discussed that before. Is the student must always be aware of that. That way the teacher can be as informal and intimate as possible. But the student must always maintain that just touch of formality. That creates the perfect balance. It means if the teacher is very formal, then it's very hard to communicate. The teacher's informal, communication is very natural. But the student should not get familiar. So all these rules are to keep the student, because once you become familiar, learning stops. Because familiarity means basically you're equal. You know, equal opinion. So the whole idea is that touch of formality is to stop the student from becoming overly familiar. Like that. Then the teacher can be very, very, you know, open, relaxed, or informal. Not to the point of, you know, how you say, frivolity or that, but just means that they can be very open and straight and deal very personally and, how you say, care very much for the individual. Because you can only care if there's some informality. You know, like someone who wants to, like a counselor, that their dealings has to be very informal and open. You can't feel that there's a formality there. Otherwise, you will not speak your mind. You will not reveal your mind. You will not, you know, necessarily take, you know, it is not so intimate. It means the bringing out of the individuality is not so strong. So that informality must be there from the senior person. But the junior person cannot forget the position. Mm-hmm. Cannot forget the position. It's like you, psychiatrist, you know they're the psychiatrist. So you don't start asking them questions, you know. Tell me about your childhood, you know. Well, why don't you tell me about yours first, you know. You know, you don't do that kind of stuff. It doesn't happen. You know, so you follow. I mean, they lead the whole thing, but it's very informal. But you maintain the balance by not crossing the line of familiarity. So you'll see all these rules are there to create that. It's not to make a very stiff, and tight. Someone might say, oh, this creates a very, very stiff and formal relationship. No, this creates the forum in which totally informal relationships can be maintained, because the student does not cross the line. Like that. It's just the opposite. Like that. This is how someone is the authority, respected as the authority, and gives direction, but very personally and very individually. At the same time, is the student has to reciprocate that by not becoming familiar. That shows that this is a cheap student. It's not a good student. It's that they cross that line. Shallow student. Their personality, their abilities are not very deep, because they have no discrimination. They can't tell where that line is. So discrimination is a function of the intelligence. So even though the child may be in, how you say, what we would call in academics, very intelligent, their memory is good, they can put, you know, two and two together, and, you know, different, yeah, very nice. But if they can't discriminate in behavior, then in the Vedic consideration, they're not actually intelligent. You know? Like that. It means they may be scholarly. But what's the use of scholarship if there's no character? Like that. So it's, you know, it's not considered. So the whole thrust is how to create an atmosphere in which very personal, individual, intimate dealings can go on, but without breaking the actual needed respect from the student for the teacher, and the teacher caring for the student, and guiding the student. That essential point must be maintained and get as deep as possible without disturbing the actual fundamental situation that creates it, that respect. Okay. 206. This is likewise ordained as his constant behavior towards other instructors in science, towards his relatives to whom honor is due, towards all who may restrain him from sin or may give him salutary advice. Here's another point that's made in 202. He must not serve the teacher by when a woman is near. So here in the commentary, it's mentioning that means if the teacher is with his wife. Because then that's the time the teacher is with his wife. So at that time, the students, they, you know, do whatever they're supposed to do and not interfere in their relation. So that's what it means here. Okay, towards his betters, let him always behave as towards his teacher. Likewise, towards sons of his teacher, born by wives of equal caste, and towards the teacher's relatives, both on the side of the father and the mother. Okay, in other words, it's making all these points of behavior. So, these points of behavior then, as we discussed in the beginning of class, then are for the teacher's teacher, venerable persons of his own family, then other instructors in science. As we mentioned, there's different lower levels of instructors. Someone who just instructs in a particular aspect, like he says in science. So these are generally various, how you say, they're all different aspects of the Purana. These, they're, yeah, what we call the science, modern science and this and that, is still dealing just with the material energy and trying to ascertain just the material energy, what it is by observation. So in the Vedic consideration, those are bona fide sciences, but they're not actually that deep of a science, because you're only going as deep as five elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And even ether they don't understand, because they say you know, the Big Bang means space was condensed into one place. But if it was all condensed in one place, what was all around it? You know, and when it exploded, where did it expand into? You don't bring your own space with you. You move into a space that already exists. Because otherwise, if you could create your own space as you moved, it would be great. You get on any bus you wanted, and how much you want, half the bus, you know, you just create it. It's just there. But no, you can only move in space what's already there. That's the Adharta Shakti. So science is only dealing with these five elements. Therefore, it's in a lower level than the philosophy, the actual paravidya, or transcendental knowledge, or the how you say, yeah, like that. It's a sub branch of the histories, because in history, then creation is always part of that, and so in creation, then you get all these kinds of sciences, understanding how things are created, how they work. So it's a sub branch of history. And then, or it's also sometimes the sciences, the arts are also known as sciences, especially the ones that are connected with, you know, that have some technique to them, or especially connected with the shastra. You know, like music. It's an art, but it's also the science of it, because it's the notes themselves, the different ragas, why this raga at this time of the day, the difference between the notes. You know, it has to be exact. And so there's a whole science there. So the art and science basically go together. They're not so much different like that. Yeah. Science is more the theory side, and art is more the application side. Okay. So then instructors in science, then, towards his relatives to whom honor is due, towards all that may restrain him from sin. So that means if they're actually able to restrain them, that means they have some influence and they have some good advice. Right? They give the advice and you are able to take it, and it keeps one, maintains one in following the proper codes of conduct. So whoever that must be, there must be respect towards that person, because that is a very important influence on our life. Because they can keep us, you know, what's it, on the straight and narrow, you know. They can just keep us doing what we're supposed to do. And it says, or may he give him salutary advice. Means he gives some very good advice, whatever it may be, you know, in our activities, in our duties, how we behave. And they give something, it's solid. It's something very useful, you know. They just kind of pull you aside and say, hey, you know, this is a situation, do like this or that. Or they give the advice, or you go to them and they can give you strong advice. So they should all be respected. There should be always this, the principle of respect and of not being familiar, right? Because we see and hear, see, many times we think that the respecting the senior means, or you do some respect or like this, it's generally in the form of like worship, you know? Something like that. But here we've seen it's very simple. It's just in the mood. It's in the activity that we're doing. Having discrimination to do the right thing at the right time, and what not to do, you know, what to do and what not to do in the various situations. So you see very much it's a mentality. So this mentality will be there for all of these personalities, from the spiritual master just down to someone who gives you good advice. Like that. That always, that little bit of, that we must always know what the line is. We should never cross that line. must always be very, very careful. Like that. Though there may be more or less, how you say, intimacy, you know, like that, like family members. It's intimate there, but you still know this is my mother, this is my father. So there's certain things you will not do, you know. You just don't misbehave like that. It's just not done, you know, like that. So this is the culture. Yeah, because it says here, towards his betters. So this was all the list of betters. So it started from the teacher's teacher right down to this person. Towards betters, let him always behave as towards his teacher. Likewise, towards sons of his teacher. He should always deal with them very properly, like that. They're always seen as like senior, like that. Born of wives of equal caste. This would mean that the when the wife is of equal nature, then you'll get an equal child, like this. So this is, you know, generally nowadays is not so, but here, if the teacher had many wives, or if the wife was of the equal, because then what will happen is both parents will have the same mentality at the time of conception. This is why the Vedic culture was very much into matching people very nicely, because then you have this, you end up with a very clean personality. You don't end up with a very contradictory personality. Otherwise, it gets very difficult to deal with. You know, especially for anyone who's trying to train. Let's say you have someone who's very intelligent but very devious, you know, or very, very gentle but very lazy. You know, it becomes very difficult to, how do you deal with that? They're very gentle, you know, but they're very lazy. And so you can't really get on the case because they're very gentle. They're not, you know, they're not proud. So only when there's pride, then it's worth being very strong. But when they're gentle, it's very hard. So you can only guide, but then they don't have that determination or something like this. So you see qualities on one side, but lack of it on the other. So what they're trying to do is get the parents where they're equally matched, so that they, at the time of conception, are both thinking of the same thing. Then you get a very clear child. You know, both parents before conception have decided we want this type of child, you know, then at the time of conception they'll both be thinking of that kind of child. Then one's going to get that kind of child. Otherwise, if the father's thinking of one thing and the mother's thinking of another, you know, one's thinking of a brahminical nature and one's thinking of a vaishya nature, then you end up with a very difficult situation. You know, someone who has a brahminical brain and uses it for business, so he has a business brain, but he tries to use it in education. So it becomes very difficult. You're supposed to, in the education field, it's a service, it's a duty. You're not looking for what is the reward, because there's generally not a whole lot. So if he's looking for that, it'll be very difficult. You know. So one has to see that. That is not there. So therefore it says when they're of equal. Because the teacher, then if his wife of equal nature, then that child then generally will also be of equal nature. So just like the father is respectable, then the son is the representative of the father. So therefore he respects that son. But if the wife is very different nature and mentality, you know, specifically here it means if she's not brahminical nature, then that son will not be seen in that same way. Because then he won't be taking that quality. He'll take the quality of the mother. Son takes the quality of the mother. So then whatever the mother's quality is, then if that's lower than the Brahman, then the child will have that. But if it's equal to the Brahman, then he, like the father, has that nature. And therefore he represents the father. In this way. As a teacher, as a Brahman. You know, legally and in family affairs, the son always represents the father. That's another thing. But here we're just talking about how the student will respect someone. So it's a fine point here. and for the teacher's relatives on both sides of the father and mother. So it mentions here father and mother, because in certain situations, certain ones on the father's side is more respectable than ones on the mother's, or is more formal, informal. It's a whole science. I've heard various ones. It's just like, let's say you have an uncle on one side. Let's say the uncle who's older than the father. Then there's one relationship there. But that same match on the mother's side, it may be a very intimate relationship, but very formal on the father's side. Or different ones. So each one has its own thing. Because it's very interesting, the whole science, because they're different mixes. Like that. You're mixing different things. You have the grandparents, you know. Then you're going to get the mother's qualities that go into the son, father's qualities that go into the daughter. Then you're going to get, what is it? Then with their children, then it'll cross again. And then you have certain relatives like this, they're natural matches. Like in one of the communities in South India, the Brahmins, then there's a particular cousin, but it's only one. It's a very specific one, the first cousin, that is exact same match, mentality, as would be with the grandparents. So it's automatically just it's from birth, they're automatically destined to be married. Only if they decide themselves that they don't want to marry each other, then they may marry someone else. Otherwise, it's automatic. No one would think of arranging another match for those two. But any other first cousins and all that, it's not allowed that they get married. It's one specific one. I don't remember what it is, but it's a very, very specific one. Out of all the different ones on the mother's and father's side. Like that. Because the genes are not of the same. They're not of the same gotra. But they're of the exact mentality. Like that. So the grandparents were a good match. So they'll be a good match. Very interesting how it works. So it's all these things that are all worked out. So which relationship that you have with who? Whether it's formal or informal, or they take care of you, you take care of them. You know, or different. It's very, so like if you have a joint family, it's not that you have, you know, 50 people that you have just happen to have relationships with. You basically have 50 different relationships. Like that. It's very, you know, scientifically worked out. So here it's pointing out on both sides of the family, of the father and mother, of the teacher, they both must be respected. So it's not that one side's more intimate or more formal. They're both formal. Because they're the family of the teacher, you know. In your own family, these are considerations, who's more or less intimate. But in the teacher's family, both sides, that is all formal. One must respect them. And 208, the son of the teacher, who imparts instructions in his father's stead, whether younger or of equal age, or a student of the science of sacrifices of other angas, deserves the same honor as the teacher. So if the son of the teacher is teaching you the things that the father would teach, doesn't matter what his age is, even if he's younger, because as we discussed before, is when it comes to knowledge, age is not as important. You know, as before, then they were the, what was it, relatives of, young Kavi, son of Angiras, Angira Muni. So his son, Kavi, was teaching his relatives, who were old enough to be his father. But he used to refer to them as little sons. So they complained to the demigods, you know, what's this guy's problem? And the demigods said, no, he's right. Because just having gray hair, you may be respectable by age, but more important than age is knowledge. So because he has knowledge and he's giving you that knowledge, he is the father and you are the son. Because he's giving you birth into knowledge. You may be old enough to give birth physically, but the physical birth, the animal birth, is considered lower than the birth of knowledge. Therefore, he is the father. So here, even though the son of the teacher may be younger or equal age, still he is treated like the father. He is respected. Like that. A student must not shampoo the limbs of his teacher's son, nor assist him in bathing, nor eat the fragments or remnants of his food, nor wash his feet. So even though he's respected, that just means in the mood. You don't be too informal with him. It'll always be respectable. But it says here, one does not offer any service to him in this way. You're respecting him like the teacher, but that doesn't mean that you do the things, kind of service you would do. You don't bathe him, you don't scrub him, you don't eat his remnants or wash his feet. That's not done. So it's the mood that is there. This is very important. You may gain the knowledge, but it's on behalf of the teacher. That respect is done through the teacher. But here, he's giving just the knowledge side. So that side, the respect is there, the formality, but not the service in that way. That's not proper. Because otherwise, then one may be thought also to be trying to please the teacher by pleasing his son. And so one has to please the teacher by pleasing the teacher, by learning the knowledge, by following the knowledge. So it's not a quick way to get a, 4-point average, The wives of the teacher who belong to the same caste must be treated as respectfully as the teacher, but those who belong to a different caste must be honored by rising and salutation. So whatever the nature of the teacher's wife, she must be honored. Rising and offering salutation means the mentioning of the name and respect and all these different things. That must be there. But those who are the same nature as the teacher, then they must be treated, then respect beyond that will be there. But otherwise, respect is always there, because in any case, they're mother. So mother's always respected, like that, whatever the situation is, like that. So that minimum principle must be followed. That is always there. So you should not think that because she is not of the same nature, therefore, I don't have to respect. No. Just the nature of woman has to be respected. So that is, there is, how you say? In other words, the Vedic culture works by, you have the basic platform of respect. Then from there, then there's so many levels above that that are there until we get to, God at the other end, basically. So then, so we have to very much avoid a mentality which is more a restricted or conditioned mentality in which we think, respect just means X amount and that's it. Beyond that's, fanaticism. So therefore, anybody who's not up to that level of respect, then, we just ignore. In other words, you start from a particular designated level that's, not so necessarily so high, and then work down from there. No, here it's that you have respect, and then you work up from there. So you have someone who just respect, then more than that, it's like all women are respected. More than that would be one's mother who gave one natural birth. Then more than that would be father. More than that would be the teacher. More than that would be someone who can give you spiritual knowledge. Like this, it just keeps going up. Like this. So one has to be very, very careful in this. It is that when applying, that one always is respectful in all these situations. So the point being made is that that the training of the student is that he's basically respectful to everybody. Because he's the youngest, he has the least knowledge, he has no wealth, he has no power and influence. Right? So then naturally he's going to be respecting everyone else. So it's very important that that culture of respect is there. So it's not that one thinks, well, they're not of the same level, so they're write-offs. You know, just like we'll use this many times nowadays. I respect my spiritual master, but everybody else, there's no real respect. You know, so many times that will be there. Okay, a little bit. You know, a touch more than like that. But one has to see that between oneself and the spiritual master, then there's so many gradations in between. Like that. So all that has to be respected. And because of lack of that, then there's so many cultural anomalies will be there. So many social difficulties will be there in the interaction between devotees. Because the actual understanding of respect and dealings is not there. You know? Like that. So these are pointing out how one must be respectful and deal properly in all these different situations. Then 2:11, let him not perform for a wife of his teacher the services of anointing her, means helping her put on oil, assisting her in the bath, shampooing her limbs, or arranging her hair. So a student would never get involved in any of these things. You see, the Bhagavatam, basically these points that are going on now, the Bhagavatam says exactly the same thing. Because one would wonder, well, how will it say the same thing, right? Because Krishna spoke these tenets to Brahma. Brahma spoke them to Narad. And Narad's brothers, the Prajapatis. So Narad speaks those same tenets he got from Brahma, who is known as Manu, and then he speaks them to Yudhishthira. And they're compiled in the Bhagavatam as the tenets for the four varnas and ashrams. And then Bhrigu, one of his brothers, is speaking it for the assembled sages. And it is compiled here in the Manusmita. That's why you'll find that the chapters in the Bhagavatam that's talking about varna and ashram and about the whole social structure, we see is no different. Like that. But the Bhagavatam, because its main purpose is the aspect of going back to Godhead, therefore the presentation is purely in the line of going back to Godhead, the most essential aspects. While here, it gives more broad, one is for, it's the technical aspect, because if you understand what the Bhagavatam says, then these things are very easy. Once you understand the principles, the details are very easy to deal with. And two, this is giving a very broad thing so that also those who may not be interested in spiritual life will still at least act as cultured human beings. And as cultured human beings, there's every possibility that they'll come in contact with God consciousness, because four kinds of pious people, Krishna says, surrender to him. And he says four kinds of impious don't. So therefore Krishna recommends better to be pious. There's a better chance of surrender. Like that. But ultimately, unless it is seen in light of the Paravidya, or the Bhagavatam, then it has no real meaning. Like that. You know, piety has its limits. If it's not in connection with the Lord, it's nice, but it's bound by a gold chain. Okay, says, a pupil who is his full 20 years old and knows what is becoming and unbecoming shall not salute a young wife of his teacher by clasping her feet. So here we see the difference, rising. Yeah, in other words, offering of obeisances. in this way where you touch the feet. Because when you touch the feet, then you put, as we mentioned, you touch the right foot with the right hand and the left foot with the left hand. So that will not be done. Because if here it says full 20 years old and knows what is becoming and unbecoming. So basically that means that if he doesn't know, if he's still very innocent, very childlike in his behavior, then it's not a problem because he doesn't see, he's not worried, he doesn't notice. But if he's older and he understands these things, then that will not be done. That will not be done because then the mind in that may become agitated here. So this also points out that it is in the Vedic culture, it was understood that even up to the age of 20 years old, that childlike innocence that is there and not really being overly or knowing so much about the attraction between boys and girls is very natural. Like that. Specifically for Brahmins, because generally others may or may not be there. Brahmins would be there, but others may or may not be there. Like that. Prabhupada recommends that they are, because then the training can get to that deep point. Because like the Brahminical training, the idea is we want to come to the platform of spiritual realization. So that only comes by staying deeply for a long time in the Gurukul. Like that. Short time you get the knowledge and you get technique. But if you actually want to get depth of realization, then generally the training is for longer. You know, because as long as one is in that student mode, one can absorb more and one can perform menial service. But as soon as one moves into the kind of the adult mode, then the ego becomes more strong and it's harder to perform menial service. So then the realization doesn't necessarily come as easily. It means if one is very absorbed and very devotional, of course, there's no problem. But here, the Vedic system is trying to create a situation in which without any extra endeavor, you're getting a good result very easily. So here, by this whole system of respect, cleanliness, and following the rules, then we see that Brahmachari can keep the senses very easily in control. So there, even at the age of 20, one may still be so innocent that he doesn't know what is becoming and what is not. You know, they don't know what looks better for the ladies and what doesn't. They don't know. So it's possible. But otherwise it's seen that generally at 20 that one, you know, generally starts to figure these things out. Prabhupada also mentions that for a brahmachari, when he's 20, at that time, then he can be questioned, is he thinking towards marriage or not? Because generally at that time it becomes clear. Before that it's not clear. But at 20, generally one has an idea of what's going on. So he can see, yes, wants to get married, doesn't. Like that. If he doesn't, he remains naistika. If he does, then when he finishes his education, then he takes the sambartana samskar, you know, and becomes a snataka. And then leaves, and then after he gets married. Like this. So one will be very careful, like this. It says young wife. He's older, that's another thing. 2:13. It is the nature of woman to seduce men in this world. For that reason, the wise are never unguarded in the company of females. For women are able to lead astray in this world not only a fool, but even a learned man, and to make him a slave of desire and anger. One should not sit in a lonely place with one's mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are powerful and master even a learned man. But at his pleasure, a young student may prostrate himself at the ground before the young wife of a teacher, in accordance with the rule, and offer his respects, like that. So for the young student, there's no problem. But the older ones must be very careful, like that. through 17. On return from a journey, he must clasp the feet of his teacher's wife and daily salute her in the manner just mentioned, remembering the duty of the virtuous. Yeah. As the man who digs with a spade into the ground obtains water, even so an obedient pupil obtains the knowledge which lies hidden in his teacher. So here is pointing out is that if one behaves properly, then one is going to, just as someone by digging in the earth was going to get water, by saluting the, by being obedient to the teacher, will get that knowledge that is hidden in him. So what is means you have the ground and you dig and you can get what makes the whole ground work. Earth is important for growing things and for sustaining life, but without the water it doesn't function. So in the same way as there's knowledge that the teacher may have, he can give you the book knowledge, but the knowledge is hidden. It's what he knows, how to apply it, how to see it, how to view it, how to understand, how to realize. That, then, only by being obedient you can get. Otherwise the book knowledge is no big thing. The Vedic doesn't consider the book knowledge the great thing. It's understanding the methodology of application, the living of that knowledge, and the realization that that gives, that is important. So if you can gain that from the teacher, that is important. Therefore, the students would stay so long in the Gurukul. Because the serious ones were trying to get that. And others who wanted to move in the world and just do the worldly duties would leave at a younger age. Like that. You know, unless they're very great personalities, and they may go. Shankaracharya left his house at 6, he finished his education at 6, took sannyas and left, like that. Madhvacharya at 12, like that. They left the house and started preaching. So that's another thing. What it means is gaining the education then is there. If one is gained and one can preach and one can practically serve, then that's all one is looking for. But we're talking here about just leaving and getting into just one's just material occupational kind of duties where that is not necessarily Krishna consciousness the forefront, like that. Is that leaving that age, younger age, for that, that's okay, can be done. But if you can stay later, one has the ability, one has that obedience, and one can get deeper and gain more from the teacher. So we see here that the teacher is respected, the teacher's family members, all the different persons that are there, the teacher's wife, and then the dealings of this, all this has been nicely explained. And so now after explaining all this, how to deal, what is the etiquette, then it says this point is you can get this from the teacher if you are obedient. You're respectful, obedient, and follow all these things. Then one can get all this knowledge which lies hidden in the teacher. Like that. So this is an important aspect that is given here. Okay. Any questions on this? Because this basically ends kind of the section on respect. How the brahmacharya is trained in respect, and how he applies it. So this basically ends this section. After this, it starts getting into other practical aspects of his life and training. Any questions on this?
It seems like this Gurukul system is like very small and localized. Is there any indication given like how many students would have in each particular school?
Yeah, the general recommendation, if there's not great, you know, just a simple house kind of situation, and for most, because Brahmins are not necessarily in general known as great managers, great organizers, like that. They're known for their knowledge and their purity and character. So the general thing is 12. Because then 12, you know, because they're all big different ages, different mentalities and that. Then even somebody who doesn't have great organizational ability, 12 can be easily maintained, and they're begging. It doesn't take very much extra, you know, the pots, the sleeping arrangements. You know, they can all stay basically in his house, you know, different rooms and verandas like that, the pots that he has for cooking. Because you can't buy pots that are just big enough to cook, you know, something just for, you know, the husband and wife. You know, you buy a pot that's bigger, and 2 can eat out of it, you know, 5, 10 can eat out of it, you know. So it's like that. It gets easy. Without much problem, 12 is easily maintained. But if someone has the facility, you know, either by one's own abilities, or the someone's are sponsoring greater than that, so that kind of support is there, the facilities are there, one may take beyond. Because this is specific. Gurukul means this when it's small, meaning just one teacher and the students. Then you have what's called a charana, which you have many teachers get together, and either in various branches or that, and then they work basically in one situation to teach, you know, so many students. So you may have hundreds or thousands of students in that way. Then either you have one teacher, the head teacher, everybody in the school is his student, and different teachers take different aspects. You know, someone is teaching, let's say, you know, astrology, someone is teaching, you know, the rituals, someone else is teaching the history, someone else is teaching Dharma Shastra, like this. But they're all considered students of the main teacher, and they are assisting in this way. So he's the acharya, and they're the upadhyayas. Or you could say he's the maha upadhyaya, they're the upadhyayas. Or you can even have 3 levels, upadhyayas, maha upadhyayas, maha mahopadhyayas, like that. So that's one way of doing it. Or the students are the students of those various sub-teachers. Means you have the astrology teacher, and the students that study under him are his students. But all those teachers work under the direction and advice and the mood and understanding of that lead teacher. So he actually gives the vision and all that, and all the others then follow that. So either way can be set up. That's on a bigger level. And, but we also see those who have, then that can also be applied in another way, which is expansion of the small Gurukul system, where you're working with, Naistika Brahmacharis. So that means they grow up, they've been learned, they've been trained, but they remain in the ashram, they don't leave, they don't graduate. So the other system, the charanas, are generally for those who are going to graduate, the snatakas. So then they will go through and then move on. So generally, one of them becomes a teacher, and then that's his service. He becomes a grihastha, and that's his service. So you'll have the main teacher, you know, a good chance maybe grihastha, and then all the assistant teachers is grihasthas. And that's their duty as Brahmins. And then like this, they put together a big school. But there's also, you can make a big school out of the one teacher with his students, and they haven't graduated. And we see this in the case of Durvasa Muni or Vishishta. They each had 10,000 students, like that. So then, there they teach the the first group of students, the first generations, and then when they grow up, because they don't leave the school, then they can teach the next generations. And then somebody teach that. So if Vishishta is specifically training 10 students, each one of those 10 teaches 10, that's 100. They each teach 10, it's 1,000. They each teach 10, it's 10,000. So Vashishtha's, been around for a long time, so it's very easy that he'll pick up a few, students like that. So they can be, but just the average person working alone, it's recommended. He sticks to what he can manage. So 12 is given as a natural figure, but if one can manage more than that, there's no problem. Like that. It's not at all a problem. But it just means that someone who they themselves has, minimal facility, means he's living in a grass hut out in the forest somewhere, and, he's not into big organization, then they'll keep like that 12. Or less. But if they have more facilities or more organizational abilities or both, then however many they can handle. There's no limit. 10,000 is probably a natural limit. You never hear of more than that. Okay, so. Trying to work out how many thousand students you'll work out like that. In other words, it's how many you can deal with and keep personal contact, and you have to be able to know what's going on. You can't not know what's going on. Like that. There has to be that open communication and all that. Otherwise it breaks down, it gets difficult. It means if the teachers are not out of touch with what's going on in the students, then that's a problem. So it's however many you can keep in touch with, and that's what's recommended. Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm. Anything else? Okay, today's what? Friday. Okay, so then we'll continue on Tuesday. Yeah, probably Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah. Then probably by Wednesday, Thursday, then it goes to the next chapter, which is then, after graduating, then marriage. And then what happens in the as a grihastha, then the codes of grihastha. This here, watch out for redheads. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.